Session number 13358, Mr. H. Wilkinson, Reel 9.
Mr. H. Wilkinson, Reel 9. What date did you leave for Sicily, Mr. Wilkinson?
Well, I should think it would be round about the 7th or 8th of July. And we were supposed to land at a place called Avola. But the sea had developed a right heavy swell. And it was almost like molten brass. No waves, just heavy swell, and it was making quite a few of the chaps sick, even the sailors.
Before the actual landing, did you know that you were going to Sicily?
Yes, we had it in mind that it was Sicily.
Were you told on the ship?
Yes.
And what happened then? Were you shown maps and photographs of the area?
No, I can't remember ever seeing a map or anything. Of course, the ship was pretty crowded. And if anybody did, well, it wasn't me at the time. As I say, we were going to land at a place called Avola. We'd been told that much. But the heavy swell had washed us about 4 miles down the coast to a place called Little Avola. And I remember getting ashore from there. And looking back over my shoulder, as I got out the water onto the sand, I could see our captain, Captain Walton, and quite a few more that had been hurt. He was holding his belly and singing Blade and Races. And that's the last I saw of him going down in the water. And as we scrambled forward, it was more or less like as though it was a sunken road or what had been a rail track, you know. Obviously it wasn't, but for all the world, like a embankments that would have held a railway line. And as we got a few yards into this, we saw Colonel Walton with a few of his headquarters men sat on the bank side there, and we were stopped there for a minute or two while people got collected and more or less sent forward.
Was there much opposition?
Considering, no, I wouldn't say there was a great deal. There had been a bit of initial fire, but I think they must have realised there was too many for them and scarpered.
Were you supported by sea and aerial bombardment?
No, I can't remember much about that. I can't remember much about any bombardments and that. There probably was, but somehow it doesn't stick in my mind so much. Not like the other bombardments we had in the desert. Our sergeant was Sergeant Dunn, a jolly little fellow from Sunderland. I think I mentioned him before when I was talking about the Western Desert. And he and I were actually the first through the wire. We got somebody come forward with a Bangalore torpedo and blown the wire, and he and I were through, and as I broke through the wire, I got a bullet on a tin hat in the half ring. Anyway, from then on, it was just quite quiet, really, to what we'd expected.
Did you see any sign of the enemy?
Not initially, no. I should imagine we'd got a mile or two inland before we got any inkling of enemy in front of us. And then it really wasn't much that I can recall.
What was the terrain like that you were, and coastline that you were landing on? What was it like?
Once we got inland, it was quite flat, really. Yes, that I can remember. Of course, it does make a difference. I might be not be entirely correct, but it seemed to me to be, as I recall it.
At what stage did you get involved in fighting on landing?
How then? I couldn't say the place, Harry.
Was your company together? Because you said you were rather scattered.
We had been, yes, but we were more or less grouped together. What was left of us, you know. As I said, there hadn't been too many casualties, considering, as far as I know. But what had happened to other companies, I can't really say.
Who was commanding your company at this stage?
Colonel Walton. Captain Walton had been, and I can't recall who'd taken over.
What are your first memories of Sicily?
Well, one of the first, really, was the difference in climate compared to the desert, the hot, dryness of the desert. It seemed to be taken, replaced by the conditions in Sicily, which seemed to me to be hot and humid. It was, seemed to be a different sort of heat. Somehow the sweat seemed to stick on you more, whereas in the desert, it was, as you sweated, it dried. But there it was more humid.
What other ways did the terrain that you were working over differ from the desert?
Oh, well, the greenness and the grapes and olives and such as that, whereas the desert was blue and sand, this was more green. And as you got farther inland, you could see higher terrain, and then way off in the distance there was Mount Etna steaming away. Yes.
Did you find it difficult adjusting to the new terrain?
Well, you felt the difference, but as ever, you just had to plod on.
The battle tactics that you'd used in the desert, did they differ markedly in Sicily?
Well, there was more cover, and I think that made a difference. And of course, the difference in the ground, where the desert was really open, you had cover here. And of course, that's something that every soldier availed himself of.
When you ultimately met the civilian population, how did they receive you?
Oh, quite well, really. Never saw a great deal of them because we were moving, but they seemed to get a cheer. I think they'd been sick of the Germans themselves because, like the Italians, the Sicilians, there's none of them wanted to fight, I don't think, basically. I mean, it was the warlords, as you can say, their generals, and being subservient to the Germans. I think they were really looking forward to freedom. I don't think they fancied the German yoke at all.
After landing, what happened to you?
Well, yes. Now we seem to press on until we got somewhere, I think it was a Solarina area, and there'd been talk of an Italian general being captured. I believe it was the Avola division they called it. But as you can understand, in lots of cases, you just got these bits of news back somehow, grapevine they call it, which in Sicily would be quite appropriate, grapevines. Yes.
Advancing as you did. What was the order of advance? You were in a fighting company. How did you move forward?
Well, you move forward towards the objective, more or less in line. But as you got nearer the objective, you spread out, which is natural. And you enter the battle in that stage, or in that order, and then more or less, as after every battle, you regrouped and got reinforcements or ammunition and whatever, and carried on towards the next objective.
What were you carrying with you on your own person?
I was carrying Lee Enfield, and I should think it would be about 100 rounds and a couple of grenades. And I don't think I had any Bren mugs then. No. I can't recall what happened, but I seem to have lost touch with the Bren guns. And I was just simply and solely an infantryman.
Did you have a pack on your back?
Oh, yes.
What was in that?
Well, the usual. Your we carried our packs, just FSMO, and we had trenching tools, and we carried our iron rations, corned beef and biscuits, and we had a cape, waterproofed one side and a canvas covered the other, and just basically infantry equipment as used in the desert, really. I can't recall having a blanket at that time. We just had this cape folded.
What did you use the cape for? When did you use it?
Well, you used it night time if it came cold, or if by any chance there were any rain showers or anything like that.
Were they very effective?
Oh, considering the purpose it was meant for, it was quite effective. I mean, you weren't at home.
What does the entrenching tool look like?
Now, it was like a small spade head. And instead of being flat at the mouth, it was shaped almost like a half circle. Maybe a little bit sharper, so you could knock into the earth, you know, and get a purchase so you could really start scraping. And of course, it had the handle. Yes.
Were they any good?
Well, yes. Of course, you sometimes swore a bit if the ground was particularly hard, which at times it was. Yes.
Uh-huh. Did you dig in at every night, at every stop?
No. Not every night. Just depended what the terrain was like. You know, sometimes you got a decent bit of cover. You may make a bit of a scrape, but not unduly deep to what we used to at other times. Somehow we didn't meet a lot of fierce opposition until we went on towards Primorsole. Things got a bit warmer then.
What are your memories of Primorsole Bridge?
Really rough. As we set off towards there, I remember we had to go down a Or was it a river we crossed first? I think we crossed a river first. And it was, with me being small, about 5 foot four, it came up to my shoulders. But somebody had got a rope across, and I think we nearly all managed to grab hold of that, but it was a heck of a shock from the heat going into that icy water.
Was this during the day or at night?
I'm not sure whether it would be towards afternoon or evening. I can't quite recall, to be honest. I mean, memory's fade. I believe that one or two of the chaps had got swept downstream, and it was very fast moving and very chill. So whether they actually got drowned, it was purported that they had done.
Can you describe the terrain you were facing and where the Germans were?
Well, all I can seem to recall from there was after crossing the river, we went so far and we hit like a sunken road. And it was a lot of tall grass, or had been a heck of a lot. That's stuff that we used to call elephant grass. And it was nicknamed Stinky Alley, because I believe the ninth had gone through and been cut to ribbons, more or less. And then the eighth had had a go. And Jerry had set fire to it, I think, with the tracer. And myself, I recall going down this sunken road, and a heck of a lot of burnt bodies. Some had been shot, and I should imagine some of them had just been burnt. And I was trying to avoid one body, and I accidentally put my foot on another one, and he sort of raised his shoulders a bit, and must have been all the gas in him, because they were burnt and bloated, those that hadn't been split open. Yes, I remember that all right. The stench was terrible.
How do you cope with scenes like that, Mr. Wilkinson?
You just have to steel yourself and try to stop being sick. As far as I can remember, that's the way it was with me anyway. It wasn't very pleasant at all.
Did you find that men were cracking under these conditions? Did you actually see anyone who...
No, I didn't. No. No, I think they were just stealing themselves as well as what I was doing myself, and trying to get on and get out of the situation there, because it was most unpleasant. You could hardly avoid stepping on bodies along there, because some of them were covered in burnt grass, and you more or less didn't see them until you were on top of them. Some of them, the clothing were burnt off, more or less naked. And,
did you lose any close friends in this action?
Not really close ones that I know. I know there was quite a few of us were good comrades, but I wouldn't say they were close friends, because most of my original close friends had disappeared earlier on. But I remember a little, Irish laddie that was laid alongside me at one time. How did we get there now? We come into this vineyard. I called them scrub vines because they were small to what a lot of the places we'd been in where there were vines. And it was there that the barrage took over. There was quite a bit of fighting and shooting. one thing and another. But while we were laid among these vines, the barrage, I think we got some of our own as well, to be truthful, whether they were shells that were falling short or not. But I know the earth was literally heaving, and I mean heaving, because this chap and I had just managed to make a scrape. It wasn't a trench at all. It was just trying to get a bit of cover and get our heads down somehow, a bit of protection. Be a scrape about maybe 2 to 3 inches deep. And we'd been bounced up and down. Anyway, Sergeant Dunn, that had managed to get to us, he was slightly in front of us, and there was a lull, and he shouted to us to go forward. So I was getting up, and somehow my foot slipped on the bit scrape that I'd made, and I fell more or less face forward. And I remember this little Irish laddie, I can't recall his name other than Paddy, which he naturally got. He'd raised himself a little higher, and I just heard him shout, and he'd got a bullet through the neck, and it had whizzed over the back of my neck. It had gone clean through him. And he was gurgling and spilling blood from his mouth, and he seemed to scramble up and turn round and go. Whether he eventually died or whether he got back to a dressing station or anywhere, I don't know. That was the last I saw of the laddie. But I was pretty hot on Sergeant Dunn's heels, I should think. Maybe 12 yards behind him, something like that, slightly to his right. And we came across this sunken road in front of us. It wasn't unduly deep, that I can recall, to what some of them had been. And we had to break through cactus hedge at the other side. Well, Jerry parachutists had been dropped, and I think some of them were in among the very vines that we'd been among, because with the barrage and everybody being split up, chaps were shouting, "Where are you, 13 platoon? Where are you, 11 platoon?" and so forth. And Jerry's were answering, and as soon as chaps popped up, they were getting shot. Anyway, as I say, we'd got through this, got across this sunken road, and broke through this cactus hedge. And Sergeant Dunn shouted, "Look out." And I looked to my left and slightly to the rear, and there was a big German parachutist just going to break through the hedge to go across the sunken road into the vines where we'd come from, when he fired and I fired. So I don't know who killed him, but later on, as we were clearing up a bit and the men, Shimoz was over, we saw him laid in the lane face down with his pack on fire. So what he'd had in there, or some cleaning fluid or what, I don't know, but he was on fire at the back. I remember that, yes.
Do you hear the men, the wounded men's cries and screams in action?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. More so if anyone hurt pretty near to you. Of course, there's lots of men hit and shouting, but in lots of cases you can't tell whether they're shouting from being wounded or just shouting as they progress. You know, there's quite a lot of noise in battle, and as you go forward, there's a lot of shouting. I think a lot of chaps shout to keep in contact with each other and just let folk know you're there, sort of thing. Yes.
Is there comfort in shouting and getting a reply from someone close to you?
I think, well, not necessarily, and even getting a reply. Just the fact that it's a British voice, and it sounds a bit reassuring to know that there's somebody fairly near to you. You're not entirely out on your own.
What do wounded men
Well, quite a lot of them just give a scream as they hit, you know, and down, and then they maybe shout stretcher bearer, just depends what condition they're in, or somebody near shouts for stretcher bearers, but you haven't a lot of time to stop. Circumstances alter cases, of course, but you can't always stop.
What effect does a prolonged period of danger and battle have upon you?
Well, I suppose that everybody's affected slightly by nerves and stress. Even though they try to hide it, I still think there's an element shown there. I don't care what rank it is, I think after a heavy battle, there's a tautness about people. Like most of the chaps I ever knew, they tried to keep the nerve. But I suppose to any civilian, maybe seen as all, after occasions like that, they'll probably think we're pretty well keyed up, which I suppose is natural. I mean, the whole element of war really is unnatural to an extent that it's so far removed from civilian life and everyday life. I mean, you're not getting up at 7 o'clock in the morning to go to work at 8 or anything like that.
Does it draw your energy out? Are you tired when this stops suddenly?
Yes. Yes, I think it does drain you quite a bit. Of course, that's the reason you get taken out of battle for a rest.
What are the first things that you particularly wanted when a battle finished?
Well, it may seem strange or sound strange, but a bit of peace and quiet. A few moments to be on your own, gather your own thoughts. And, of course, the rest. Because you're chewing on with all this kit in heat. And you're glad of the rest, glad to get the webbing off your shoulders for an hour or even minutes times. You'd like to shed it all and just be relieved of the weight. Because you're running about not in clean fatigue, you've got all this tackle with you, weapons and kit and accoutrements.
Do you look upon the dead and the wounded and have any thoughts of relief that you weren't amongst them when the battle's finished?
Well, I suppose inwardly you do, but you don't voice it. I mean, it's a case of there but for the grace of God. You feel sorry, especially if it's somebody that you've fought alongside for quite a while, or somebody you've got to know personally. I mean, in quiet moments, you may talk of each other's families and where you come from and, you know, things like that. And depending upon how long you've been alongside a chap and how well you know him, or how far you're going to miss him. How much you're going to miss him.
Right. What did the battlefield look like at the end? And you've got this relative quiet, noise has gone, the guns have ceased.
Well, it's just like a bit more of the Sicilian countryside. The battle gradually, the noise petered out, and I think the silence hits you for quite a while afterwards to what you've just been going through. All the noise is gone, sound of gunfire's gone. You never know how long for, but you've got to appreciate that it's gone.